present is in collaboration with Dragan, which is present here, Lee, which is here, Quintus is not here, Loco is here. And it builds on other work we've been doing in the last 6 to 9 months. And it's about entanglement resonances. And I would like to acknowledge the Institute of Mathematics and its applications for support for my travel here. This is the outline of the talk, which is completely irrelevant. Okay, so what do we want to do? Well, we've been talking about localization in this day, and I think I'm going to go along the lines of localization. What I'm going to talk about is boxes, and what do we want to do with boxes? Well, one of the aims, the big aims we have, is to investigate how motion affects entanglement, right? That's stuff that people are doing in different ways, and if you want, it can boil down to the idea that somehow there's these Bourgeois transformations that relate modes in different parts of space-time, or relate modes after some motion has occurred to modes that before motion has occurred. And therefore, it's something that you want to study, you want to use, right? And understand, possibly. Why has it gone back now? Forward. Yeah. We want to develop techniques to enhance fx, whatever fx you get. Fx are usually small. To detect the Euler effect, you have to have massive accelerations, whatever, the Casimir effect is super small. So you want to try to enhance whatever effect we can get to convince people that actually what we're doing is not completely nuts. And what I'm going to talk about is shaking. And you'll see what that means. We want to use and find suitable localized systems, and the figure is going to pop out in a second. But to find them is not enough. You also want to propose ways to use localized systems, right? And what I said I'm going to talk about is boxes. Okay, so why do we want to do this? To study all these things? Well, Bourgeois transformations, which I just mentioned, describe particle mixing, right? So at least the beginning of the field was about Unum modes, Wendler modes, all these different modes, and the basis of the business was Bourgeois transformations. The Bourgeois transformations just tell you that, well, different observers don't agree on particle content of states. And this can create some problems or some interesting new effects that arise. Localized systems are experimentally accessible. So this is something we're moving towards. We want to be able to, at some point, to tell somebody how to make an experiment. And we have to describe it in some localized way. You cannot just tell people, prepare global states, go somewhere in a black hole, and et cetera, et cetera. You have to be able to do stuff locally. We want to, the last two points are just long-term aim. So we want to understand how gravity affects information communication and processing that I am not going to address. I'm just saying that what we are doing is somehow the beginning, it's first steps towards these aims. But it's something that at some point we want to understand. And of course, what we want to do is to make lots of money, enhance this current classical and quantum technology. And that's something that we could make lots of money by improving. Well, I don't know. I want to make money at least. No, I'm joking. Okay, so what are the tools we're going to use in this business? We're going to confine, so imagine you have a box, right? And you confine some field in the box. We confine a bosonic field, and we confine it massless. And there's a reason why, but there's lots of technicalities that I'm going to skip. So there's some A and A Duggars, the spectrum is discrete, and to every mode is associated some creation annihilation operator. Okay, they satisfy the usual commutation relations. We are going to use covariance matrices and continuous variable techniques, and in particular covariance matrices. For those that you don't know what they are, good. Otherwise, I cannot go into technical details. So if somebody wants details, they can come and talk to me later. Anyway, we will apply our techniques, we need to consider Gaussian states, and in particular, we will start with a vacuum or Korean state. Covariance matrices allow you, if you consider Gaussian states, to map infinite dimensional systems to finite dimensional systems. In particular, your density matrices, instead of being infinite dimensional for bosons, they are just 2n by 2n, where n is the number of modes you're considering. Okay? If I considered all the modes of the field, I would still have an infinite by infinite matrix. But what I'm going to do is pick just a finite subset of modes. Okay? In particular, there are going to be two. So this is just going to be a 4 by 4 matrix to consider.
Are you going to use that for putting on a cutoff?
Is that how you're going to do it? No, I'm going to explain in a second how we're going to do it. Yeah. We're going to use Bobulu transformations again, and what they just do is they relate some operators at the beginning, before the motion starts, to some operators at the end of the motion. And everything we do is in perturbation theory, so in a small H parameter, H is related to two physical quantities. What happened? It died. God knows. Yeah, it's back.
I think your screensaver.
Okay. So I'll keep moving it and moving. So it's related to two dimensional four quantities. A is the acceleration of the center of the box, proper acceleration. L is the length of the box, and C is the speed of light. Okay, so to answer your question, we select two modes, k and k prime. K is an integer, k prime as well. The frequencies are omega k and omega k prime, and they are oddly separated. If they're not oddly separated, the effects, we won't see the effects in the calculations I'm gonna talk to you about. So since we do everything to first order, you have to select oddly separated modes. If you select two modes of the spectrum, we find that to first order, the state is pure. So you can ignore all the rest of the modes. We consider the initial state sigma I of these two, of this k, the sigma is the vacuum. So in particular, in this formula, it's represented by the identity matrix. And since we're considering two modes, it's just a 4x4 identity matrix. Any travel scenario of your box, let me move the mouse a bit. Any travel scenario of your box, which can accelerate, decelerate, stop linearly. It can go far, it can go close, it can do whatever you want. Any travel scenario, any combination of these things, of uniform acceleration and inertial coasting, stop, inertial coasting again, et cetera, is, I would call, segment. Pick your favorite segment. You can accelerate a bit, stop, et cetera, go to a far, to a distant far. And in this formalism, it's represented any such travel scenario, or segment actually, is represented by a matrix S. Okay? The state after n shakes, at the beginning was the identity, the state in this formula is after n shakes is simply represented by S transpose to the power of n, Sn. And I call this segment after n shakes sigma n. So I told you I have some combination of uniform acceleration and inertial coasting. I do whatever I want, that I call segment, then I can repeat it, and so on. Now, if you have to remember something about my talk, is this. We find that, as we define the condition for resonance, entanglement resonance, as the vanishing of this commutator. Notice that this is non-trivial. It's not an orthogonal matrix in general. But the orthogonal matrix preserves the particle content, why the point is that these two matrices in general don't commute. Okay? That's why this thing is not a trivial idiom. So if you have to remember something, this is the condition of resonance, and this is the whole basis of what I want to convey. And why is it important? Well, Jesus, I thought I logged out from Skype. I didn't. Sorry about this. No, I did log out, but I just didn't do it. Okay.
So
why is that the condition for resonance? Well, first result, whatever scenario you pick, shaking a lot, inertial travel, then shaking, whatever I want to do. Pick your favorite segment. If I repeat it for any such segment, I can first of all, if that condition is satisfied, I can have resonance, entanglement resonances, I will describe following, for the proper time, total time of the segment, equal to some 2 pi n, n is an integer, divided by the two, sum of the two frequencies. Okay? This is universal and does not depend on the details of the travel scenario. You can do whatever you want. If I give you a black box, above boxes, kind of ridiculous, but well, anyway, if I give you something that you don't know what's going to do, and there's an input, there's an output, all you need to know is that independently of what happens in this magic box, there's going to be a resonance for this total time of travel. So if you have a plug, if you have a switch that can increase and decrease time, you will see at some point, beep, some resonance exactly for these times, okay?
On resonance, so when that condition is satisfied,
well, trivially, if S transpose commutes with S, this identity holds. So the sigma n is equal to sigma 1 to the n, okay?
That's a trivial statement. But
if we employ And by the way, you guys did it as well, Jason and Andrew, you're talking about the logarithmic negativity, but it's just a function of this. So things can somehow conspire from different perspectives. If you employ the symplectic eigenvalue, and forget about what it is, it can just give you a measure of entanglement. In this formula, is, well, we're using perturbation, so I can tell you it's 1 minus something very small, and that something small is positive. On resonance, we show that second result, which is independent from this, we show that sigma 1 after n shakes is proportional, linearly proportional to sigma 1, to nu 1 after one shake. Okay? But we know that any negativity type measure in covariance matrix formalism is going to be a function of the symplectic eigenvalue of the partial transpose, forget about the details. And any such measure is going to have a perturbative expansion that is proportional to sigma n after n shakes. Therefore, we find that for any of these measures, we'll detect an entanglement resonance, that will detect another resonance for these times that goes linear. So this is our main result. Okay? So you have some travel segment, you repeat it, and you repeat it. You can find that for these times, total times of travel, independently on what you do inside the box, you have a linear increase of entanglement. Remember that this doesn't mean that you can have infinite amount of entanglement. We're working in a perturbative regime. So you start from very small entanglement, and then you can increase it linearly by if you're clever enough. I'm not claiming that you can have squeezings of 10,000 out of what you're going to do. I'm just claiming that if you start with a very small entanglement and you're clever enough, you can linearly increase it. Okay? And this is the main message of my talk. S transpose S commute to zero in this formula is imply A this, B this. Okay? And this is some plot. So if you put some numbers in, there's lots of parameters. So we plot sigma, the correction to the eigenvalue, because I told you that that's really what matters. And any measure of entanglement is going to actually see this increase, the linear increase of this correction. So after n shakes, this is n. This is the time of, so what happens is now you have, imagining that a uniformly accelerates, and then I stop it. And for example, shake. But it's not a sine or a cosine. I have to uniformly accelerate, and then uniformly decelerate. I agree that it might be weird, but that's the way we can treat the business. It's some kind of shaking, if you want. But I cannot do it exactly, okay? So if that is the scenario, basically the total time of travel is just twice the time of acceleration, because then you decelerate in a clever way. We choose the lowest to most, just for convenience. We choose h to be 10 to the minus 4, which is anyway still high in the physical parameters. What we can predict analytically is that we expect a resonance for the third tau 1 equal 1/3. We expect a resonance to tau 3 equal 1. And we expect a vanished resonance, I'll explain what that means, for tau 2 equal 2/3. And if you see here, this is 1/3, this is 2/3, this is 0, and this is 3/3. So we can analytically predict everything in this business. What do I mean by vanishing resonance? Now, I don't have time enough to explain. There's some work by Nico and Yvette. And if you read there and you read the paper that we're going to put out, revise actually, there's an explanation that not every resonance, it is not true that for every, so this is a necessary condition for resonances. It's not sufficient. So if you are on these times, then you might have a resonance. What you show is that for some of these times, there might be vanishing resonances. So something goes wrong and the entanglement is not created in the first place. But you get times for which you can create entanglement and increase it linearly. So that's the message of my talk. Oh yes, and just to get some names going, this is called the twin shard thin plot. Okay, conclusions. So what do? We employ localized systems, boxes. Oh, this is HP, there's some HP guy here. And covariance matrix formalism. We find that bipartite mode entanglement can be increased linearly by shaking the box. And now shaking is just a funny term, so I'm not really shaking the box. I can do more complicated travel scenarios, okay? So my message was just that, in general, shaking is just what it looks like, if you want, in some sense. For any travel scenario, we can have resonances. So this is not limited to some particular travel scenario. For any, you pick your favorite, we can find your resonance. We have analytical control on every parameter. We know what every parameter does in this business. So you tell me how to change the parameters, I'll tell you what the result is, and it's not numerics. To do the plots is numerics, that I agree. But for the rest, we can analytically find the result. Now, this looks like maybe it can be far from experimental reach, but this is not true. We are seeking experimental implementations, and actually we find people that are interested in what we've done. In particular, Daniele Faccio at Healthwater in UK, and Chris Beans and Lester have been interested in what we're doing, and actually have there's been ongoing discussions on how to implement our results. I'm not claiming that we have an experiment that's going to be proposed tomorrow, but at least it's an ongoing discussion. And I want to mention, because they are there creeping, that the dynamical Casimir people have been awaiting for the Casimir community has been awaiting for the demonstration of the dynamical Casimir effect. And it is true, there's a paper about it in 17th of November 2011. We remember very well this date. There's a Nature paper that says experimental demonstration of replication of the dynamical Casimir effect. But they do it not in a mechanical resonator, which would definitely prove the effect. They do it in some analog model and some optical setting. So, oh Jesus.
Come on. Sorry guys, it's just annoying. You're talking and then this thing goes blind.
You can Skype us the rest of it.
Okay.
So we believe our effect is quite linked to the dynamical Casimir effect. So we think and we suggest that it might help with the detection of the dynamical Casimir effect, which is simply if you take a box and vibrate one wall and you have an initial vacuum state, you get particles out of the vacuum, particles or correlated pairs of correlated particles out of the vacuum. And maybe by studying our entanglement resonances, it might be easier to actually verify that this effect is actually occurring. I'm not claiming that we're going to do it, I'm just saying that this is what we suggest.
And if you don't know what the dynamic Casimir effect is, there's a picture about it.
And thank you.